Thank you for having us all here, and again, you know, joining us on a Monday morning to talk about what I think is a very exciting topic, and nice to see how it's continuing to grow as we sit and look at rooms like this growing at public health conferences. Just as necessary that I have no relationships to disclose. Just to give you a little bit of background of our work and efforts in Maine before I go into what we're doing today with our disclosure law and what I'm going to be talking about, this is just the structure of our coalition. So I head up the Breathe Easy Coalition of Maine, which is including our 10 years of doing smoke-free housing work through the Smoke-Free Housing Coalition of Maine. And we are funded by our state health department and their tobacco control program, the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Maine, and sit at the local health department working statewide to reduce involuntary exposure to secondhand smoke through policy change. So just to give you a little bit of idea, as I said, we've been working on smoke-free housing for quite a while, and I've been very excited to see some good change to what is happening. Through voluntary policy changes, we've seen 100% of our public housing authorities adopt smoke-free policies. Two of our five tribal housing authorities have policies that affect at least some of their multi-unit buildings, making those buildings 100% smoke-free. And our surveys have found, and through our evaluation efforts, that we're just shy of 50% of all private multi-unit housing, so subsidized and market rate, being smoke-free. So we're at a good change, and things have happened. And we've had some other efforts that partnering with the Maine State Housing Authority to make sure that folks who are funded through their low-income housing tax credit program are required to be smoke-free. But we're really still not seeing that supply meeting the demand for smoke-free housing. And we're still, as a coalition and all of our local partners, we're getting a lot of those calls still from tenants who are being exposed to secondhand smoke involuntarily, not realizing what was happening. So we need to want to figure out, you know, where do we go from here? We're going to keep pushing the policy change component. We're at this exciting transition point where we're really starting to see smoke-free housing being the norm rather than the exception. But tenants are still being exposed, especially those who might not realize what's happening. So we decided to say, you know, we're going to take this step back. We've been working on this for a while. We know that there's no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke and how much that smoke is moving around in apartment buildings. Up to, you know, 10 to 65% of that air is moving with those toxins. We want to make sure that we're protecting people. And we've got this great policy that is a win-win for our property owners and managers and our residents. So how are we going to make this change? How are we going to make sure that there's an awareness going on to really, really have an impact? Because what we know with that supply not meeting the demand, we've heard from studies all over the country that at least 7 out of 10 residents would really prefer to live in a smoke-free environment. And that's including both smokers and non-smokers. So we want to make sure that no one is involuntarily exposed to secondhand smoke, but especially that we're having that supply meet the demand. We did a big evaluation of our efforts about 2 years ago in Maine, and looked at this and said, you know, okay, asking residents both in market rate and subsidized housing, you know, is the property and unit that you're currently living in a smoke-free building, so only a 100% smoke-free building? This is where we were finding out around that nearly 50% rate. And I know that this is a very small pie chart, but the important component is this second one. Of those people who are still being exposed to secondhand smoke or still living in a building without a smoke-free policy, the majority would prefer to live in a smoke-free environment. So how do we help connect those dots? If they're looking for it, but they might not know that is something that they have an option for still. That as we're trying to get people to know to ask about smoke-free housing, or we're trying to make sure that they're getting that in writing, if you haven't been exposed previously or you don't come from like a family of tobacco users, you might not think about the secondhand smoke being a component in that apartment. So how do we make sure that they're being more aware of it? And also we know that those tenants, their landlords, we found out, were interested in smoke-free housing, but they thought that their residents would all leave. So how are we connecting those dots, making sure they're communicating with each other? So we looked at what was happening in some municipalities, as well as also at that point only in the other state who had done this was Oregon, and said, how about disclosing the secondhand smoke policy. What can we do? We know that for any enforcement of any tobacco policy, that our communication is really key. We want that. We need that signage. We need awareness for if we're going to have compliance, if we're going to have everyone on the same page. So how do we sort of make sure that right up front we're getting there? So we worked with to try to say, you know, maybe we want to put this communication in writing, and which is what we've always advocated for property owners and managers to do. But is there a way to take that to the next step, especially for those who maybe haven't thought about adopting a smoke-free policy yet? We you know, there's still a lot of questions also from landlords about whether or not it's legal to go smoke-free. I think we've come a really long way in that, but there's still some who are missing out on whether or not they're being discriminatory by adopting those sort of policies. So we need communication. We need a way for them to understand this. So we were looking at disclosure laws and realized that Maine has a lot of them. Sometimes our landlords aren't so happy, but from a public health standpoint, they make a lot of sense. So sitting around what we've got, looking around lead paint hazards, bed bugs, radon, energy efficiency, and a few other things are examples of what landlords are already required to disclose in writing through state statutes. So we decided, you know, how can we do this with secondhand smoke? So in 2011, we had brought into our legislature a bill called an Act to Improve Awareness of Smoking Policies in Maine Rental Housing. This was our sort of way to take this on and really say that we're not going into a statute way of requiring smoke-free housing, but we want to make sure that people know what their options are, that they know about the harmful effects of secondhand smoke. And basically, we had really good support from both sides of the aisle to get this through, because something pitching this as an awareness also for landlords that it's saving them some headaches down the road. So this was able to go through and was signed by our governor in 2011 and took effect that fall. So we're now just past the 2-year mark of having this law implemented. So what does it say? I don't expect everyone to read all the law language. I've memorized it, but that's my job, so we'll see. I'll try to paraphrase. So the key is the fact that a landlord is required in writing to disclose what the building's smoking policy is to tenants before they sign a lease agreement. So when you've got new tenants who are coming in or prospective residents, you have to, in writing, have them both sign off that you understand and have a mutual sort of understanding of what the smoking policy is. This doesn't negate from going forward that you can adjust that policy if you weren't smoke-free to going smoke-free, but the fact is that you're letting people know. So you're really empowering those tenants to know whether or not there's that potential for secondhand smoke exposure in the building. And so it was one of these pieces that it passed through, and we were able to put the information out there. So it's telling them whether or not smoking is allowed, and is it prohibited everywhere on the premises, and allowed in all areas or allowed in limited areas. So we're putting these pieces into place. One of the other nice side benefits is the fact that this also is a good reminder for property owners and managers about the fact that they can adopt smoke-free policies. It put it into a nice way that saying, well, if I know that the majority of my residents would want to live in a smoke-free environment, and now I have to tell them that they might be exposed to secondhand smoke, maybe this is a policy change time. But it was one of the things that we've seen coming out of the law. So as I mentioned, what does it mean? We know that it does not require property owners and managers to change their current policies. But it does allow an opportunity to maybe change practices if people are thinking about it. They're notifying their tenants of their house rules anyway, so you're getting a good opportunity to raise compliance, raise awareness of what you're doing. Again, we went through a lot of efforts with our mom-and-pop landlords to know the fact that they don't always have written lease agreements, so how does this all play out? Again, there's still a written disclosure that's needed to have one simple form. There was not a standardized form that was required by the state for this because of the fact that we have a variety of smoke-free policies that are already in existence, so we didn't want people to have to go back and change their current written policies in order to meet the statute. So it's just requiring some written documentation, and our coalition has worked with a lot of the apartment associations and different groups to be able to come up with some template language to support them. And the fact is that this is not something that people are just seeing or talking about. It's required to be a signed document, so you know that that information is getting out there. So it does. It really provides a win-win-win situation for the property owners and managers, for the residents who are going through this, but also, I think, for public health. It's been something that we've seen as a great way to continue on our efforts and to sort of expand what we're doing in the smoke-free housing arena. This is an example just up here. I'm going to go through a few things, but one of our roles that came out to help this bill go through as a grant-funded organization who's already working on smoke-free housing, one of the roles that we took on was the education for property owners and managers so that there wouldn't be as high a large fiscal note attached to this bill. So that helped us to be able to get it through. But so we did a variety of postcards, different components, and trainings to make sure that they knew what was happening. But what we found is that for landlords, we've seen that policy awareness really help with compliance, and it's a reduction in those headaches of the complaints of the chosen policy of tenants who are not knowing whether or not their neighbor is smoking in compliance with what the building is allowing, or if they're being they're being in violation of the policy. It's sort of giving people a little bit of an upfront awareness. For residents, we're really working on this as an empowerment initiative to find healthier housing, to make sure that people are aware of what their options are, and that awareness of the fact that you have options of smoke-free environments and that you should be asking for them, that those landlords want to hear about it, but also residents need to know that they have that option, not to get locked into a multi-year lease in a building that you have a family member with asthma who can't live there. How do we stop having to, as the public health professionals, have to get those calls that are heartbreaking, that you know that people are now stuck in these situations? So trying to empower them to really take this on. And these are also, I put sort of our general public health components as to why this is something that is so, I was seeing the time ahead of time. from the public health sector, that and which are benefits, I think, to everyone, so to our landlords and our residents. We know that this law raises awareness about the legal options to adopt smoke-free policies. We do an annual evaluation of landlords in the state of Maine, that just a quick four question survey that we're able to put out there, and one of which has been since 2007, are smoke-free policies legal? And we've seen since this law went into place, we know that there are a lot of other factors, but we have seen a huge jump in the sort of acceptance and agreement that is something that they can adopt. So that has been a change that we've seen. We've also seen a change in the amount of smoke-free policies. But that awareness of that has been a huge change. As we know, we're empowering tenants to ask for smoke-free housing, and we know that that will have an impact on the number of policies that are being adopted and the likelihood of that. It's not going to affect everyone, but we know that when we're looking at this from a landlord perspective of the financial components, this is something that's going to, these policies save the money and their turnover costs, but also they want to be attracting residents, and they want to have happy, healthy residents who are living there. So it becomes a good win-win for them, and by empowering those tenants to be talking about this issue, it'll get them a long way. From our coalition standpoint, as who are out there to try to do the education about the harmful effects of secondhand smoke and the benefits of going smoke-free, this law has really given us a new opportunity to connect with people. So we're always trying to find, you know, innovative ways or reasons that we can go out and have better dialogue with the housing professionals. And so this has been another new way to get sort of in there and open up some conversations. So we've seen it as a proactive opportunity and to come at it from a slightly different message point, but then that way we're also being able to support them through the smoke-free policy changes. And the key that we get down here, it shouldn't be listed at the bottom of the page because it's really the real reason that we're doing this work, is the fact that we are protecting people from secondhand smoke. That's the key as to why we're doing this. So the hope is that by having this disclosure law and increasing the number of smoke-free housing policies that are in existence, it's going to be reducing that home exposure to secondhand smoke. So we're trying to see this as a good component for that social norm change, which is then also going to lead to some healthier behaviors for our residents. It's something we're 2 years in, as I said, to our law. We're still in the evaluation process to see what impact it has really had, working on sort of a larger scale with some partners on that to hopefully see that it's had a positive effect on the environment from both the resident and the landlord side. We still have a lot more work to do with it. Unfortunately, one of the few things that was not exactly what we wanted, it's a law that's in place. However, there is no penalty currently for not complying. So that's the hard thing, is that we're really sort of going, you know, working on this, and it's a great sort of step in the right direction, but it's, again, falling into the same components of voluntary compliance a little bit for the landlords, but we don't tell them that. that there's no penalty, but it's sort of starting to have that good dialogue. It's a good opportunity to get people there, and especially as we're dealing in our state with some continuation and broadening, where we've found that our disclosure law now will have an impact for with our medical marijuana laws, but also if we're dealing with some potential legalization in some communities, and so that is required under the law. It's all smoking. It's not just tobacco smoking. So it's going to have a continued impact on those secondhand smoke components. So, and I know that we're going to hold questions to the end, but I want to throw up our contact information. You can get a lot more information about both this law and any of our resources on our websites, or by contacting me. Always happy to talk about this. So thank you all very much.